It's Hey, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
And I'm Rebecca Lavoy. Shit, I was trying to do my best, Rebecca, but I don't think I did.
You look so different than you did yesterday.
She's got better hair. I'm Maggie Freeling.
Hi, Maggie Freeling. And welcome, everyone, to Something's Off. We call it a true crime podcast, but lately we're just mostly talking about what the actual fuck is going on in the world. So we are here today. I am so excited to have Maggie on the show. Maggie is one of my...
You're supposed to not curse, actually.
I know. Well, I'm allowed to curse, but not in the first like 5 minutes, seconds. Yeah. And I always forget that.
No. And so I'm Rebecca. We are. Remind you, here we are.
Thank you. She would really appreciate that. Maggie is one of my heroes in the journalism sphere. I would say, besides Pam Smart, you are probably the reason why I started really getting into true crime, because I saw your Maura Murray documentary on, was it ID or Oxygen?
Oxygen. Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is how I want to do it.
Shit.
So I don't know. I just love you. And I'm so happy that you're here. And I have so much respect for you. And I'm probably going to fangirl all over you. But why don't you tell, for those people who live under a rock and don't know who you are, tell us who you are and what you've been working on.
Yeah. So I'm Maggie Freeling. I'm a Pulitzer winning journalist. I won that Pulitzer for the podcast Suave about juvenile lifers. And basically since then, I have been working in wrongful convictions. I have a podcast, Wrongful Conviction, with Maggie Freeling, and I investigate wrongful convictions. So I just had another large investigation come out called Graves County. It's season 3 of Bone Valley, which I imagine a lot of listeners might know.
So good. Can you tell us a little bit? I don't want to give the synopsis of Bone Valley. I'd rather it come from you. So why don't you tell? So this is season 3. Mm-hmm. Different story, different host, and you are the host. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Bone Valley, and then we'll get into it a little bit later.
Yeah, so Bone Valley season 3 takes place in Graves County. That's what it's called. And it is about a 5-time, what I believe, wrongful conviction over one murder of a young woman named Jessica Curran, a young mom in 2000, and the fallout of the investigation or lack thereof, and how over 20 years it just consumed an entire town, and 9 people were charged, 5 convicted, an absolutely bonkers situation.
Right. And the underlying story is about a citizen sleuth who sort of gets the headlines and kind of solves the case, but you start to tear that apart. I don't want to give too much of it away, because if you haven't listened to it, you should go listen to it. You can listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. It's really good work. It's beautifully done. One of the things I love about Maggie is that she puts pressure on the people who don't want to talk to her. And I have a really hard time with that. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, you know? I won't go into too much detail because I want people to go listen to it for themselves. But the British journalist who's working with your citizen sleuth, he didn't want to talk to you. Is that right?
He still doesn't want to talk to me, but continues to email me all the time telling me how much of a shit journalist I am. But he definitely didn't listen to the podcast, and he doesn't want to talk to me.
And he kind of said that you were like in a cult.
He said I'm a baddie conspiracy theorist.
A baddie conspiracy theorist. I love that. I was like, where do you get the word baddie from? Isn't he like 90?
He's British. No, not baddie. B-A-T-T-Y.
Oh, baddie. B-A-T-T-Y. When I heard it, like I thought he said baddie. B-A-D-D-I-E.
No, and I know. Like, everyone thinks that. And I'm like, wait a second. No, he's British. It's baddie.
Oh, that is hilarious. Thank you for clarifying that. I feel like we just got to.
I know. I feel like I need to make an announcement about that.
Maybe you should just do like a meme or something. Yeah, we actually had this conversation the other day, and then you texted me and you were like, how do you not know what balayage is? And I'm
yes,
Maggie, I mean, I don't, I'm a freaking chapstick lesbian. Why would I know what balayage is? And And then we had this big conversation about blonde with an E, blonde without an E. And I'm just like, okay. So I should have known. I should have picked up on it.
I meant to text you that I'm on your side. I do it with an E.
Somebody told me, a couple of the commenters have been saying that apparently blonde with an E is the feminine and blonde without an E is the male, which I'm like, is that fucking real? Okay, great.
So, okay. I didn't know we did that in English. I thought that was like
Yeah, Spacey Stacey said, like, batshit crazy. That's what he's talking about. Not batty, like the kids are saying these days. Yeah, batshit
crazy.
So what are you working on right now? Do you have anything going on that you can talk about?
Well, I am working on season two of Graves County because this story is just, unfortunately for everyone involved, the gift that keeps on giving. Every time, you know, we find a rock, we turn it over and there's another horrible something happening in the state of Kentucky. So I will be in Kentucky again for the next year. I'm looking into that, still doing wrongful conviction and a lot of exciting things coming up with TV for Graves County. We've got a lot of offers. So
amazing.
We'll see where that goes. Love it. Yeah.
I want to see you on TV again. Otherwise, how are you feeling?
It is a struggle to wake up every day and like, just know I have to look at the news and just like dread that, just dread opening my phone to just more horrible news about our country.
Yeah, I saw this morning that if the protesters don't start behaving themselves in Minnesota, that the Insurrection Act is going to be happening, which is sort of what we were all saying was the whole point.
I was going to say, what is the difference between what's happening now and that? I mean, it's all pretty lawless. It's all pretty chaotic. We already have federal agents. And I actually just posted a video this morning, an hour ago, about what I saw in Memphis when I was there, how militarized it was. And I was really surprised. You know, I'm pretty used to seeing a militarized city, just DC, New York, you know, it's kind of, you're just always used to seeing that.
Sure.
But Memphis was shocking. And there was 13 different federal agencies. I would look left, HSI. I'd look right, it was the IRS. You know, it was just like, and Memphis, the video I posted was just explaining why it's intentional. Memphis is the first place that they've deployed all 13 federal agencies. And they have carte blanche, basically, to do whatever they want down there. And citizens, particularly Black residents, it's a majority Black city, are saying, we are just being stopped for driving, you know, just a reverend was pulled over for unsure driving. And of course, Black person, that could have escalated very quickly. So it's horrifying.
It is horrifying. I had a big conversation with one of my friends yesterday, Mike, who is a Black man I think he's probably in his 30s or so. And about a couple months ago, he got pulled over in an Uber in DC because ICE was pulling over his driver. And I've been scared for Mike for a long time. And yesterday he finally kind of told me that what he was feeling too. And he's like, I don't know what to do. Like, if they ask me if I'm a citizen, I know I have the right to remain silent. I know I don't have to talk to them. And I was like, yeah, but in what's happening right now, that becomes probable cause. And he's like, but that's illegal. And I'm like, yes, Mike. And he's like, so what do I do? And I'm like, I have no idea, brother. You know what I mean? So it's like, I had this conversation this morning with my partner, Lindsay, too, where I was like, I really want to talk to the people who, you know, are the big proponents of the Second Amendment, which I don't have any issues with guns as long as they're not like being used to kill people, civilians. But when the argument was, we want our Second Amendment because we don't want the federal government busting down our door and attacking us, we need to defend ourselves, they are silent right now, or they're taking the side of the federal government that is busting down the door and pulling people out. And then there's the other hypocrisy of, well, you shouldn't be impeding with law enforcement. You shouldn't be attacking cops or federal agents. Then what happened on January 6th? And how are you justifying that? And then there's, you know, it's just like the cognitive dissonance is so insane to me. And to me, it sounds like you're not going to get a real answer, because the real answer is, what we actually want is for no more Black and brown people or gay people in this country. We want it to look the way we want it to look, but we can't say that. So we just have to flip flop.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's intentional. Yeah. It's absolutely. It's a intentional cognitive dissonance. And we live in a post-truth world. I mean, that's how this happens. You know, when you go back and research how Nazi Germany happened, it happened because media was complicit. Everyone was complicit in, you know, the rise of that. You know, I listened to this really great podcast episode. I forget what it was, but it was really about the media and the role it played in the rise of Hitler and fascism. And when you live in a post-truth world like we did then, it's really scary. That's what happens.
It's really scary. Yeah. And then just to have people in my own sphere who don't see their own, like the alternate, I put out an episode on the In Between podcast about Renee Good. And though I was focused on the fact that I believe that she was murdered, it was more about this. When did we start doing this? I know we've done it for a long time, but when did it become the norm? And I realized, like, okay, going back to like 2016, 17, when Kellyanne Conway goes on the news and she says alternative facts, and she even stumbles over it in the moment. So she knows it's a lie. And the, you know, the news, the journalist, newscaster, whatever he was, calls her out and says, there are no other facts. Facts are facts. So what you're saying is a lie. And she still goes with it. And I'm like, that's the moment. That's the moment where everybody realized they had the permission to do it. And now they're doing it. Honey Kids.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say from the chat, I don't know if you can see the chat, the comments on the screen, but they said, same. I'm actually experiencing physical symptoms, anxiety. We had ice in my tiny Minnesota town this week. I feel for my Minnesota neighbors. Yeah. I mean, this, everyone's like, well, this is what they voted for. And I'm like, I don't think this is actually what they voted for. Maybe it is. Maybe some people,
I think so. Yeah. But, you know, I think I was listening to polling yesterday and it was like both sides agree that we should the actual word abolish ICE is now a term that folks on both sides believe we should do. And when I was talking about Memphis, I wasn't even just talking about ICE. I actually only saw a few ICE. I was seeing the IRS in full kit out there supporting Memphis Police Department, the same department that murdered Tyre Nichols a couple years ago. So it's like, it's just really shocking and horrifying. And I know you and I have been texting about how similar it is to how The Handmaid's Tale went down.
Oh, yeah.
Just to a T, how we are so quickly slipping into Gilead.
Yeah. I mean, I told you also that I had been working on a novel, like a dystopian kind of novel. Yeah. I started it, I think, 2014. So I've been working on it for a long time. And I have two scenes that stick out in my brain. And one of them is two of my main characters are actually trying to hide from federal agents. And, you know, it's ICE and they're ripping people out of their homes. And it's what's happening in Minnesota. And then the other scene I have is a teacher with like a high school class and ICE comes in to take one of his kids and the whole class fights and people die. And it's like, this is where we are.
Wait, that's
and
I wrote happening. That
and I'm like, I'm too traumatized right now to continue writing the book, you know, because I'm like,
it's too real. It's like, it's not a fiction anymore. It's real.
Yeah. It's kind of scary. And I think the worst part for me, we can move on from this in a moment. I know that, you know, people get up in arms about politics but you know, like I said the other day, politics isn't just politics. Politics is my life. It's my everyday. So
it should be everyone's life. I feel very strong. If you don't care about politics right now, you are missing everything that's happening.
Yeah. I just, I'm really triggered. I'm really like, every morning I'm waking up and I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to see now? And, you know, and it's like, I feel so helpless for the first time in my life. Like, I've been an activist my whole life. You live in Austin, Texas. I marched on the Capitol when I was like in my early 20s because, you know, Governor Bush at the time was trying to put all of us gays on a list. Like, there were a couple of things that he did that really terrified me. And part of the reason why I left the state and went to New York was he, not only did he want to put everybody who tested positive for HIV on a list, he wanted to put the gays on a list. And while I was there and in my early 20s, so this was like the 90s, this was like mid 90s, so it was illegal to be gay, basically. Right, and right. if your neighbor didn't like gay people and saw you go into your apartment or whatever with somebody, they could call the cops and be like, there's gays having sex, come get them. And the cops would bust down the fucking door and take these people out and send them to jail. And so we were marching the Capitol over those kind of things. So I've been an activist my whole life. And right now I have no fucking idea what to do.
It's
like,
it's,
I just don't know what to do.
You know, I consider myself like a escalationist, and I do believe like what needs to happen is what's happening. Burn it down. We saw last night, they are burning down police cars. They raided one of the ICE vehicles and got a lot of documentation.
I saw that. It was crazy. It's all their plans.
It's their plans. And then did you see the like coin? I don't know if that's like 100% real yet, but I saw good sources reporting that there's this like skull and crossbones with a crown, and it's like a reward they're giving each other when they detain somebody.
Holy fuck. Well, they get a bonus when they detain somebody too. Praise be.
Praise be.
Praise be. A couple of other, so I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist. I hate that I am, but when I start to see something and I'm like, okay, now I have to dig and I have to see if there's anything to back this up. So I have a couple things I want to ask you about, and you may not know about these stories, but I talked to Ellen about them yesterday. Have you been hearing about Sasha Riley?
I have no idea who that is.
Okay. So this is the Epstein files.
Okay.
I don't know how much you know.
No, I am pretty deep into in the Epstein files, but Sasha Riley, I've not heard.
This is crazy to me. So I talked to Ellen about this yesterday, and this is a Twitter thing right now, and it's actually like trending on Twitter. Sasha Riley is this guy who at the age of 4 was adopted, but not to be someone's son. He was adopted to be someone's sex slave who was rented out to Epstein and the group, right? I don't know how he came to be. I just know that a journalist found him and started seeing some of his tweets that have been going back for a decade now, where he's actually trying to call these people out. And his father, who I think is called Bill Riley, is all over the Epstein files, and Virginia Dufresne actually named him as well. So that part of it I know is real. Okay. He is saying he is the adopted son of this guy. He is explicitly naming Donald Trump as having sexually assaulted him, raped him, and he has also witnessed him doing it to other little girls. He went on record with this journalist that found him, and there are audio interviews.
Yeah.
And he actually he's like, if you want to verify my story, there are CPS reports from all the schools that I went to for teachers reporting sexual abuse. There, I've done a polygraph before for the FBI. You can give me another polygraph. I know polygraphs aren't, you know, we can't use them in a court of law. He has a list of 20 things that will verify his story, and he went on record, and there's audio of it, and you can listen to it. And most of it is heinous, what he's talking about, murdering puppies and things like that. This group is just really fucked up. So you haven't heard of Sasha Riley. He is trending. The conversation that I had yesterday with Ellen was, it's twofold. To me, it's coming out of the blue, and it sounds so horrific that I'm almost not believing it. It's almost like Pizzagate or something like that. You know what I mean? And then the other side of it is, if it catches on and people do believe him, do you think that he's going to have, like, he'll have more credence because he's a man and people aren't really listening to the other Epstein survivors because they're women? Do you have any thoughts, first of all, about conspiracy theories and how we now, in this day and age, as journalists and human beings, how do we verify and determine what's the truth?
Yeah.
In 1 second, you're enjoying your first day off in forever. Then mid-lunch, your phone buzzes. A window's been broken at home and you're miles away. In 1 second, everything can change. That's why ADT offers security systems with 24/7 monitoring, with tech that helps first responders prioritize your emergency. And with the ADT Plus app, you can stay informed and in control of your home from virtually wherever you are. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com to learn more.
So I Googled Sasha Riley quickly. Yeah. And everything, all like what I would like as a journalist, like the first thing I'm seeing right now is the Hinduism Times, the Hindustan Times. Mm. It's like outlet that's reporting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird because every time I see something Fringe, it's coming from like a hint. It's weird. So that's my first like, okay, this isn't, it's kind of Fringe right now. I see the Sunday Guardian. I don't know who they are. And then MSN. So right now it seems like it's just, you know, a Twitter thing that's being picked up by Fringe outlets that want like a headline.
Yeah.
But again, like if his story isn't real, I would bet someone else's is, right? So it's like, I believe something very nefarious was happening beyond what we know. And it makes me think of Johnny Gosch. Do you remember? So Johnny Gosch was kidnapped, and he's one of the most famous like kidnappings of the 80s because he allegedly was sold into like this sex ring that like Bill Clinton was part of. And we've always been hearing, I forget the name. If someone in the chat knows the name of this specific ring that Johnny Gosch was allegedly part of.
Johnny Gosch. And so, I don't know the name.
Gosh, I think he was like a milk carton boy. There was whole podcast about him that was really great. And yeah, he was the milk carton boy. And so he allegedly was like sold, kidnapped into this elite sex ring. And so we've been hearing about that since the 80s, about Johnny Gosch being sold into this elite sex ring. We're in 2026 and we are getting records of elite sex rings. So
yes,
I can't just dismiss it. I can't just dismiss it.
That's where I am too.
I can't. People dismiss the Johnny Gosch thing for so long and are just like, elites can't be doing that. I have come to believe that Bill Clinton is one of the most despicable humans on this planet. And I can't just put it out of my head anymore.
I agree. And that's why I'm really struggling with this, because first of all, I believe survivors. That's my baseline. And then I go from there. You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, I listen to these tapes. I listen to this interview. This guy is, first of all, a white boy. He is a combat veteran. He also happens to be gay. And I'm saying that hurts him on the other side. But when I listen to the audio, I can't disbelieve it, because I can't imagine that he was able to, on the cuff or whatever it might be, make this story up just to try to hurt Donald Trump, which is what I think a lot of people are saying. I think some of it's verifiable. You know what I mean? And
yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like, has it, like, yeah.
Yeah. So it's mostly, like you said, it's mostly on Twitter right now, but he, not only has he named Donald Trump, he's named Clarence Thomas. He's named Ted Cruz. He's named a bunch of people. He's got associations. His father has associations with Ohio State, and he's also named Jim Jordan. And there's that whole Ohio State thing. Yeah. It's like, I'm like, there are so many strings to pull. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but if there is a victim out there who has the receipts and is willing to name names, because because the women are scared to name names because they don't want to be killed. This guy is like,
Dupree was killed.
I don't know enough about it to say that. I know that she was horribly traumatized, and I think Jeffrey Epstein was killed for sure.
Even though didn't we see that letter that looked almost like a suicide letter?
The Epstein letter?
Yeah, there was a letter that he wrote
They said it was fake, but he wrote it to Nasser.
Yeah,
to Larry Nasser, the American gymnast, the doctor. And it was like, I mean, I think that letter was probably fake. I don't think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. I just don't. There's too many like weird things that happened, and he could have taken so many people down, you know, I mean, in a big way. And the thing is, like, this man is starting wars so that we don't see what's in those files. It's got to be horrendous.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely agree. Which is why I believe it. I believe it. I think it's tragic that a lot of these people aren't listened to and are just considered nut jobs, especially when they've been traumatized for so long. How are you not supposed to feel insane when you've been screaming your story forever and no one believes you?
Yeah. D. Cool said the one on Michigan Island. I'm assuming that we're talking about
The pedophile ring. I'm still trying to Google right now. That's why if people see me, my eyes are crazy.
It's okay.
It was like the Clinton County sex scandal. It was some ring. I literally just screenshotted it because it came up in another like something I was watching, because this is like a very famous pedophile ring that always comes up. And Johnny Gosch was like the first kid that was like kidnapped, that was high profile and infamous, that people heard about it. So yeah, I believe that we have an Eyes Wide Shut situation in the United States? Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, when I was investigating Veronica Rodriguez's case, you and I talked about that briefly because I was able to interview the guy she was accusing of sexual assault. And he wanted to talk, which was hilarious to me. But the other side to that case. So the thing that was blowing my mind, and I was literally not able to sleep trying to figure out what was happening in this little county in Pennsylvania, was that the guy that for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I covered Veronica Rodriguez's case on the In Between podcast. And then a few episodes ago, I sort of told the case to Rebecca so she understood what was going on and you all knew what was going on. Veronica Rodriguez very quickly accused a man of sexually assaulting her in a car, and she recorded the entire event. And instead of arresting him and charging him, she was turned into the suspect in the case. And she was actually convicted of a felony for recording someone without their permission because it was a two-party consent state. And she spent about 3 weeks in jail. She is now a felon. It's now they're trying to appeal it. But I wanted to understand what happened. So I've heard the recording that she made. They played it full in court, and she says no several times. She says, dude, stop trying to kiss me, you know, all these things. She also had a rape kit that was positive for DNA. She was covered in bruises. He told her not to tell anybody. Like, the idea that a jury actually convicted her still blows my mind. But anyway, in my investigation, I did like a 7-part series on Veronica's case and all the people involved. And I got Fahad, who is the guy that she accused, to talk to me. In the process of investigating it, I went and I talked to a bunch of people. I went to Pennsylvania and I talked to a bunch of people there. And all the women were like, you need to go look at Shahana Doyle. You need to go talk to Shahana Doyle. Shahana Doyle is a woman who lives a few counties over. She's very well known on TikTok, and you know, she's a streamer. She does, you know, she's a Twitch streamer and she does like gaming. She's also a model. She's been trying to tell her story for several years now of the fact that her mother was Sri Lankan. Her father was an old white dude. They got married. They had her. He immediately started selling her to cops in the area where Veronica had accused this guy. Shahana Doyle also named Fahad as being part of the sex ring, the sex trafficking ring. I couldn't get anybody on record to talk to me about it. Shahana would not, she was so scared. The police were like showing up at her door, threatening to send her back to Sri Lanka, all this shit. So she's like, you know, tight-lipped, can't talk about it, but she'll go and she'll do a stream and she'll openly talk about it until her boyfriend is like, you're going to get in trouble. Stop. And she has to shut the stream down. I talked to her a couple of times and I was like, listen, I know that you're terrified. Can you verify like one thing for me? And it was about Fahad, and she verified it. So, you know, and he was military. He was close with the cops. He was close with the chief of police and her husband. He was close with the lead investigator on the case. I found his Venmo where he got paid for dinner with the chief of police's husband during the trial, and verified it. And it's like, I can't figure out a way to get anybody to talk to me about this sex trafficking story that apparently has been going on for years and years and years. And half the guys are dead. So I need, like, why can't I get people to talk? And I don't think anyone, like a layperson, really understands that when a sex trafficking ring is happening, people just are fearing for their lives, because if something like that gets out, people will be murdered.
So,
and women especially.
It's so funny you say this, or interesting, not funny, because the whole reason I got the Graves County story is because we were told, yes, there's this wrongful conviction, but it's all surrounding this sex ring of these young girls. And this young girl was probably killed because she was involved with these officers. That initially piqued my interest. And so, yeah, we've been just hearing about this sex ring, you know, this one officer at the center of it for years. The entire community has been hearing about it for years. Yeah. There are people who have talked about it, but it's like, I can't get that concrete. You know what I mean? Like, I have some of these women now, but were young girls at the time saying like, yeah, I fucking did this with him. But it's like, I need some proof of it. I need, you know what I mean? It's so difficult, but I believe them. I believe them.
Oh, absolutely. I had victims contacting me who every 2 days would change their name on Signal because they were so terrified of these powerful men. And they were telling me what happened, but they were telling me I couldn't talk to him about it. I couldn't ask him about it. I couldn't talk about it in the podcast because they're so scared for their lives, you know? And when the whole reason I actually ended up talking to Fahad is because I found one of his ex-girlfriends and I emailed her and I asked her, and she got so mad at me that she started responding and like just screaming at me in email. But she was so mad and that I was even asking the question that she went to Fahad and was like, I'm being harassed because of what happened. And he contacted me. So I was like, you know, and he was willing to talk, but he perjured himself on the stand. And that came out in the interview. He also said in the interview with me that he wasn't sure he fully had her consent. Mm. And her current lawyer, this happened before she went to sentencing, and her lawyer would not pursue it. So now I'm assuming it's going to be a part of the appeal, but who fucking knows? But everyone is terrified. So can you imagine? These are small time rings. Can you imagine a worldwide network of like powerful billionaires?
That's where I think I question, you know, I've seen, you know, the idea that Virginia Giuffre was killed, and I don't know enough about her death, how it happened. If someone knows, but I wouldn't put it past them. She knew a lot. She knew a lot. She had more to say.
She was talking.
And she was talking. She knew a lot.
That's why I'm worried about this Sasha Riley character, because, you know, the thing is, if he is telling the truth, and he's already said that they've tried to kill him before.
I believe that.
So if he is telling the truth, I do worry about him. If he's not telling the truth, I guess I understand his motivation, but still, it's like, this is going to ruin things for a lot of people if you are lying. And I hope you're not.
It reminds me a lot, if anyone follows like Disclosure and UAP stuff, I am a huge UAP alien nerd. I follow all of that. And it's really interesting if you watch all of these whistleblower hearings. These guys are out there, all of these military folks being like, I was on the inside. There's this one really famous one, David Grush. You'll see him a lot. He was on the inside. He was working these intelligence programs. He's the one that's like, we have human and non-human biologics. Like, what the hell? Oh my God. And he has actually claims, you know, because all these people are like, we can't find any evidence he worked in the government. He claims they erased all of his records. Like, they can do things like that and be like, this guy's crazy. We don't know him. We never worked with him. Yeah. That's how powerful they are.
What do you think about, so this happened yesterday that I believe it was the FBI, served a search warrant with no warning on the Washington Post journalist.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And took all of her devices. And she had, from what I've heard, she had confidential informants, basically. Like, she had confidential sources all over her devices. And what's going to happen to those people?
Here's the thing. It's like, we know that's illegal, constitutionally protected.
Yes.
But the damage is done. Nothing's going to happen to her. She's pretty, you know, it's like, it's going to go through the system, but the damage is done. This happened to my friend in New York. She was a photographer. She was photographing a New York Times protest, had a photo of people doing property destruction at the Times, and they raided her home in the middle of the night. Her and her wife were dragged out of bed, took all of her camera equipment, stuff like that, and her life is ruined. Wow. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen to her, but she can't work now.
Right. And I feel like we just can't even say anymore, well, that's illegal. It doesn't fucking matter anymore. That's insane to me that we're living in this space where we go, yeah, no, that's illegal. You can't do that. But they are doing it.
That's the thing. It's like, our democracy has crumbled. People don't believe in the system anymore. We are an empire in decline. So it's like wherever we go from here, it's going to be different. We are not going to go back to, you know, the way things were before. We have, we're in for some change.
Yeah. And so the, on the other side of the WAPO journalist story is the guy who was basically sneaking classified information out of the Pentagon, like in his lunchbox. He's in, he's gone. They've like, they've disappeared him. The president already came out and said, we found him. He's in jail. You know, we're going to find all the rest of them. And it's like, he hasn't even had a trial yet, this dude.
It's absolutely horrifying. I really never thought, I've been a journalist for a very, very long time, and I just never thought I would see this kind of assault on the Fourth Estate, the institution of journalism. It's horrifying.
Same. All right. That was all very deep and heavy. Let's get into some Karen Reed stuff.
Okay, great.
All right. So you are, I love it because I get text messages from you where you're like, wait, what happened? Why did this witness say blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, oh, this is hilarious, Maggie. Tell me about how you learned about Karen Reed and your interest in the case. And I know you were on the readathon with Rebecca at one point, but tell me how you found out about Karen Reed and what your thoughts are. In a general way, I guess.
So I would guess I heard about her through crime writers. I'm assuming that's how, because Rebecca was on the case from the beginning because of Turtle Boy.
She's done like over 100 episodes on it.
Yeah. So I imagine that is how I heard of it. At minimum, I've been listening to them since they started the Karen Reed stuff. So that's how I heard about it. In I look into police misconduct. That's what I do. And knowing Boston police, knowing that area, I lived in Massachusetts for a long time. It just immediately, I was like, oh, there's something here. So yeah,
especially state police.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Where did you live in Boston?
So like I lived in proper? Western Mass. No, I lived in Western Mass. I went to UMass Amherst. So I was there for 4 years. I was all, I love was in that Northampton, campus. East Hampton, everywhere. Yeah.
I love Northampton. I was in Somerville.
Yeah.
Somerville, Massachusetts. Yeah. So as soon as I heard about the case, there have been a lot of cases in New England right now that I'm just like completely into. I mean, the Brian Walsh case, the Karen Reed case, Sandra Birchmore case, I'm really
I liked really hearing Karen mention Sandra Birchmore in that interview.
I did too. And her fear associated. Like that whole situation was so eerie to me. The idea of like being a woman at home trying to have a normal life before you go to court on, you know, murder charges based. Well, not murder yet because they hadn't upcharged her. But, and then through her open window, she hears men saying, hey, let's do this around back. There's cameras out.
Horrifying.
And her first instinct is to go, holy shit, it's the fucking Massachusetts State Police and they're going to Sandra Birchmore me. Which is, that was her first thought. That's insane.
Insane.
Absolutely insane.
Insane.
Yes. So, I've always wanted to ask you, we talked about this briefly when we were talking on the phone the other day about your connection to James Renner and our connection to Turtle Boy. What are your thoughts about Turtle Boy? You can be totally honest because he's a complete douchebag, but he does good work sometimes.
So. You know, it's so funny because I don't follow any of this on the internet. So the only things I see or know from Turtle Boy is what you guys have presented. So I don't know or see any of the like heinous things he says or does. So like, since I haven't seen it, it's not like resonating as much. So to me, the way I view him is like, he's got facts. I would never be his friend, but he sounds like he's a reasonable person when it comes to his journalism at minimum.
I think we should definitely have a t-shirt that says something along the lines of facts, not friends.
Yes. I think that it is very him. And so, you know, I was sticking up for Renner as usual because we were kind of comparing the two of them. And, you know, the thing about Renner is he isn't this like closeted bigot. Renner is a really lovely, kind, like bleeding heart kind of person in a way, which is why I think he kind of comes off wrong. I think he's just kind of a sad person, kind of at the world. And I think they both rub people the wrong way with the way they do things. But in Renner's defense, he is not a Turtle Boy.
No, he's definitely not a Turtle Boy. He's Renner's really interesting because he's just dogged. You know what I mean? And because his doggedness turns people off, especially the people he's trying to interview or if I get information from. This is going to lead me into, I know that a lot of people talk to you about Maura Murray. We talked about Maura Murray the other day, and I found out, I didn't know this, but Rebecca came out to me that she is completely on the opposite side of the Maura Murray case with me than I am.
Oh, wait, this is crazy. What are your sides? So,
in 1 second, you're enjoying your first day off in forever. Then mid-lunch, your phone buzzes. A window's been broken at home, and you're miles away. In 1 second, everything can change. That's why ADT offers security systems with 24/7 monitoring with tech that helps first responders prioritize your emergency. And with the ADT Plus app, you can stay informed and in control of your home from virtually wherever you are. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com to learn more.
Well, her side is that Maura wandered off into the woods and died.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And I was like, who even are you, Rebecca?
Rebecca,
like,
you're what? So who? I think differently of Rebecca now.
I know. I was like, in the moment, I was like, you're kidding me. I thought we were on the same side about this. And I don't necessarily have like a concrete idea of what happened, but I do think something nefarious happened. And I don't think that she ran off into the woods. I was making the argument the other day that in New Hampshire, you know this well, having lived in New England, you can't run in 1 to 2 feet of snow into the woods and get away from the police who are looking for you. You just can't.
So no, you absolutely cannot.
So I want to know what you think actually happened. I've never been able to ask you this question. Can you tell me what you think happened tomorrow?
Well, I'll tell you what didn't happen. And it was okay. Her running into the woods because the amount of searches they did in that vicinity, specifically that vicinity, and found no scent, no footprints, no trace, no evidence at all. Again, there would be footprints that she went there, and they were searching immediately after. So it's not like there was some body. Every searcher, everyone, like, that is the thing that happened. Like, saw the fish and wildlife was out there doing flare searches with, you know, heat detect. Mm-hmm. Like, it just,
yeah,
that's the one I feel like I could say there's did no footprints. Not happen. there's no footprints, and there was snow and not snow and ice. So like, maybe they were every officer there feels confident that is not what happened. I thought it was more possible, which again, probably didn't happen because there were scent dogs and footprints, that she went to a neighbor's house and they could have snatched her in. You know, there was those two neighbors across the street that called in the call, and it was always kind of a joke of ours. Like, well, maybe she did go knock on their door and they just like kidnapped her and she's still in the basement. what I think happened is the scent dogs lost her scent at the corner. She made it not very far. But here's the thing. I stood there at nighttime at the exact time of night and season she did. And that small run at night in the dark is actually kind of far. And so what I think happened is she did set off on foot. I do think she did that. And I think very quickly was like, I'm not making it far. This is a bad idea. And a car pulled up and she was desperate. And I think she got in that car.
I completely agree with that. And so you think that something awful happened to her after she got in that car? She didn't like run away to Canada.
I don't think she made it anywhere she was going. You know, the interesting new news is that there were fingerprints identified in her car.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
That go to this guy. Renner just sent me something. Let me get the guy's name because Renner's been talking to him. The guy's name is Stephen Baldwin. Fingerprints.
Oh, that's funny. Why is Stephen? Wait, who's Stephen Baldwin? Not associated with this case. No, I was thinking of. It doesn't matter. It's something true crime sphere. I don't know.
So his fingerprints were identified. Police have spoken to him. He's been questioned. He was a West Point friend of hers. So that's really odd. The guy is currently in prison for like a animal abuse something.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, this guy. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Not a good guy.
he was doing he had a dog rescue and he was actually killing the dogs.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's in
prison for. Euthanizing that, something like that. Yeah. So Renner's in touch with this guy.
Interesting.
We don't know anything else other than the police have talked to him. I've seen, you know, some of his correspondence, and that's kind of where we're at. You know, I have always believed she could be in a morgue somewhere really far away. I feel like someone could have just drove. Someone was just driving, you know, like, I don't think she's in New Hampshire. I think she would have been found. I mean, the searches, sure, she might not be if she was like buried or something. I just think this person took her and I think they left the state very quickly.
Think about the kids who were in the car coming down from the, what ski resort was it?
Yeah, Loon Mountain.
Loon Mountain. And I've skied at Loon Mountain before. I don't ski, but I tried to ski at one point. I distinctly remember I was like, sure, I can do a black diamond. And like my friends were all like, they were all skiers. And I was like, ah, fuck it. And I got on the top of a black mountain and went straight down as fast as I possibly could and literally took out like a 4-year-old kid who was being, his dad had between his legs.
God.
I went through the dad's legs. And then I didn't have a ski lift because I wasn't supposed to be on a black mountain and I had to fucking walk all the way back up. That's what I did at Loon Mountain. But I think about those guys in the car or that were going to the party or whatever, you know, whatever the circumstances were. And they always stick out to me. You know, and I think that's just because I don't trust those guys like in real life. And so I'm assuming that they did something stupid, you know, but I just don't know.
There's so many possibilities. She could be in a morgue and it was never queried. Someone might not know it's her. A lot of morgues around the country are just overflowing literally with bodies. And it's one person that's putting them in the system. Mm-hmm. Someone just mentioned Brandon Lawson and how he wasn't found for a really long time. True. That was a case of private property. Where they weren't able to search on. And we do know that there is private property right near where she went missing. And we did always think she could possibly be buried there.
Yeah.
That's possible, but I don't believe she walked off and died in the woods.
What do you think about the rag and the tailpipe? That was the other debate Rebecca and I had.
Yeah, that she did that. She did that. Yeah. That was something Fred told her to do.
I mean, I told Rebecca that my grandfather told me to do the same thing because I used to drive this old beater. And it was so loud. And he's like, first of all, it's so loud. Everyone's going to like call the cops on you. And if the cops hear you, they're going to pull you over. So if you're just going a short distance, stick a rag in there. So as soon as I heard that story, I was like, that's the truth. She put that rag in the car.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did that drive, you know, and here's the thing. I was a UMass kid, Maura's age, and struggled. She was going through a lot. I mean, the things that have come out that Renner has found, you know, about potential sexual assaults, you know, she was going through a lot, what a lot of us in college went through, and she took off. I could see that being me, just taking off, trying to get away, you crash your car. You're just like, fuck, I'm going to start walking. And then you're like
another thing added on top of everything else.
Right, everything else. And like, she just made a mistake getting in a car with somebody. People always said the bus driver could have taken her. He was the last one to see her.
I always think about him too. I brought that up with Rebecca. She doesn't believe it. She thinks she walked into the woods right there. And she's like, she was like an extreme runner. I was like, Rebecca, you cannot run. I used to do it. I was a soccer player in New Hampshire. I used to have to run through the snow. You can't do it. And on top of that, there were no fucking footprints.
Here's the thing. It was so cold. And she wasn't dressed appropriately. Wherever she was going, she wasn't making it far. And they searched miles again with flare, dogs, ground crews.
Yeah.
She's buried or she's not in the state.
Yeah. No. Well, there it is, everybody. Now we know what Maggie thinks.
Watch they find her, like, you know, 100 yards off the street. You know,
right? Watch, Rebecca's right. She's probably right. She's usually right. We put a bet on the Brian Walsh trial, and I lost so badly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure. Rebecca and I are usually we have the same thoughts and opinions, but I was really shocked when she said
I am shocked, Rebecca. I love you so, so. You're brilliant. You're one of the smartest people I know, but that's...
You're wrong.
But you're wrong. And I think less of you now. Just kidding. I don't.
Can we talk really quickly about Murder and Alliance?
Yeah.
I know that that was a very difficult experience for you. And I think it's one of my favorite pieces of work because you were so... You just put yourself out there and you showed us exactly what was going on with you in that situation. I obviously don't have the career that you have and I don't have the experience that you have, but I for sure have experienced moments. And actually, I called you a few months ago because I was working on a case. I am working on a case still about a guy who has been convicted of, he's basically a serial rapist from the 90s. And I've started to understand that he may not be the guy. Mm. And I'm struggling with that because, again, as you know, a sexual assault, sexual abuse survivor myself, I tend to believe women who say they were abused. And it's not that I don't believe the women in this case, but I think they got the wrong guy. And he's been in prison for 20, 25 years. And so I called you and I was like, what do I do? How do I approach this? How do I say I don't think that a guy did this? And like, how do I do this? And you gave me a really great insight. And you basically were like, you have to tell the story that's going on with you in order for the audience to understand like what they're looking at. So can we talk briefly, first of all, for the audience, Murder and Alliance, can you tell the audience just a synopsis or so of what that one's about? It's my, one of my favorite pieces of work you did.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know, but we did just re-release a director's cut. So it's a bit shorter. Yeah. We just re-released it. It's called Death and Deceit in Alliance. Yeah. Because I got reached out to by Steve Fishman at Orbit Media, who also loved it and was like, look, I would love to re-release this, you know, just do some trimming. It was really long because it was a live investigation. It was 20 episodes. So we've cut it down to 14 episodes. Just cut a lot of like the leads we followed that didn't really go anywhere. So it's a much more concise. So if anyone does want to listen, Death and Deceit in Alliance. But yeah, so I went into this case. It was the case of David Thorne. I had covered him for my podcast, Unjust and Unsolved. And I just couldn't stop thinking about this case. Yeah. It was 22 years. Famous journalist. It's been on like every ID show. It's a case that people are always looking into. It had legs and merit. And as I was investigating with these two PIs, we a year into it, we're like, I think this guy is where he needs to be. Mm. And it broke me in the sense that I just believed in him and I then felt so betrayed by his lies. And in the podcast, I do confront him about it at the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, it really broke me actually for a few months. Like I just lost all confidence in myself. And Danny, the PI, is the one who said it to me. He was like, Maggie, you know, you put out the truth and the truth is this. And now, you know, you didn't fail. He made me see it in a, I didn't fail. I didn't waste all these resources, time, money on this case that turned out not to be what I thought it was. He said, now no one else is going to spend time, money, and resources to continue.
That's such a good point.
To look into this. Like it's done now. It's done. And it has been. This was 5 years ago. Yeah. I haven't seen his name. He's where he belongs. And he's not duping other people anymore. So in that
sense, did your job at the end of the day. Like that's the thing. You actually did your job. You sort of figured it out, you know, and so nobody has to question it anymore. It's pretty amazing. Jason Baldwin, you worked with him on that one as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Jason Baldwin was part of the West Memphis 3. And now he has what is his company? What does he do?
Well, it was called Proclaim Justice, but it folded. Right. They're not active anymore. So that was his innocence organization that I was working with. They're not active anymore. But yeah, Jason's still doing the work.
Yeah, that's good. I have the same struggles often with the Pamela Smart case. Everybody take a shot because everyone was like, we're going to drink every time Mel brings up Pamela Smart. But, you know, it's an important case to me. I've been working on it for over a decade. You know, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
But I had one of those moments today and I thought of you, or yesterday, and I thought of you again because I got the news that, you know, they filed a new habeas for her a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, asking for a new trial based on new evidence that I uncovered in the investigation, and they just gave her a hearing.
Wow.
She got a hearing for the first time in, I don't know, 20 some odd years. She might even be going to New Hampshire for the hearing. She hasn't been to New Hampshire for 33 years. And this is what they want. They just want an evidentiary hearing to, to, you know, do what they need to do. So the habeas is based on 5 points that are like, well, first of all, I interviewed this woman named Marion from Loyola. She deals in confirmation bias, which to me was really important because of how they presented the only evidence in the case was wiretaps that supposedly Pam is like admitting to being involved. But they're inaudible. You can't hear anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, there are parts you can hear certain things, but because you can't hear anything, the district attorney's office created transcripts. Never certified the transcripts. A secretary in the office wrote the transcripts. They handed them to the jury. The judge was like, oh, these aren't evidence. They're just a guide so you understand what's going on the tapes, right? It's always been my sort of white whale. And I was like, there is no way that a jury who is sitting there looking at a transcript can erase what they're reading on that paper.
Right,
and the and the DA or the prosecutor, Maggiato, he even took like what he thought was the most incriminating parts of the transcript, put them on giant whiteboards in front of the jury in his closing arguments, pointed at her and said, there she is. She said it right there. She's guilty. And you can't hear her saying it, but you can read that she might have said it.
Oh, my God, Mel. That is crazy.
So I enhanced the tapes myself and I started going through all the tapes and I started doing my own transcript to see if anything. And there are so many instances where they literally insert words into her mouth where there's silence on the tape. And I was like, okay, this is wrong. And I'm not a certified anything, but I can hear with my own ears after enhancing it. And I can, you know, write my own transcripts. And I had 8 pages of inconsistencies.
Wow.
Handwritten 8 pages of inconsistencies. And so I gave it to the lawyers. I interviewed Marion from Loyola. And she was like, this is insane. She had the same reaction you just had, which made me feel good. And she said, I want to do a study. I want to get my students involved. I want to do a study. They did this fucking study, Maggie. It is groundbreaking. It's going to be used in so many cases going forward.
God. Like what was the study? Like what they're hearing, transcribing?
So basically 3 groups of people, 191 people involved in the study. And they only took people into the study who would have made a jury. So they did voir dire basically. And so they took these 3 groups and they gave 1 group just the tapes. They gave 1 group the tapes and the transcripts as they were. And in the 3rd group, they gave them the tapes. And I believe from what Matt, her attorney, has told me, they gave them 2 sets of transcripts that were like, this is what we think. And then they changed the words so it could be similar to what was on the tape. And basically the only group that was consistent was the one that had the tapes. And all they said was they had no idea what was being said.
Wow.
And so she literally proved that if you give a jury a guide on paper, there is no way to erase that from their brain.
Yes.
And so many of the jurors said that the only reason they convicted her was because of the tapes. That was the only evidence in the case. So that was the first point. That was what we basically figured out in the podcast. And then the second point was I tracked down, there was a juror who was the oldest woman on the jury. And I had found out that she had given an interview several years. This was like 2000. She'd given an interview to this like fresh out of school college reporter for some defunct magazine, some law magazine that's defunct now. And I found the transcripts and I found the tape of the interview. And in this interview, the juror says that she convicted Pamela Smart based on a story that she had read in the Boston Globe. So A, that's completely wrong. But B, the story in the Boston Globe was completely wrong because what they were reporting on had never been introduced as evidence in the trial. And so I find the reporter. She is like, who's Pamela Smart? I don't know who you're talking about. She's a Wall Street Journal reporter.
How do you not know who Pamela Smart is?
Immediately threatening me with legal action if I use her name. So obviously I'm not going to use her name here. I'm like, okay. I go through the whole story with her and I'm like, if you can just stay on the phone with me, maybe I can jog your memory. Cause she's like, I don't know who Pamela Smart is. I don't know what you're talking about. I never did that. And so I give her her managing editor from the defunct magazine. He works for like NBC News now. I call him. He's like, oh yeah, I remember that. So I get the only thing I can get her to verify. And I luckily I did it in text was that is her tape with the recording and that is her handwriting. And so now she's probably going to be subpoenaed because that's the second point of the habeas. And then the third point was I figured out that the judge, when he sentenced Pamela Smart to life without parole, he said, I'm mandated by the state of New Hampshire to sentence you to life without parole. He wasn't mandated.
What the fuck?
She's been in prison for 35 years. But anyway, so all of these things happened. And yesterday she got a fucking trial. She got a fucking hearing.
Oh, she got the hearing. So when's the hearing?
February 27th. And I'm just like,
amazing.
I don't even know what to think because the problem is that she has never had any luck. The people in New Hampshire hate her. She wants nothing to do with New Hampshire. She wouldn't. She's in New York. They transferred her out of New Hampshire into New York 2 years into her sentence. She's a citizen of New York, basically.
What is her life like now? Like she's, you know, since I was a kid, I've always known of Pamela Smart and always knew she shouldn't be in prison for what they said she did.
Yeah.
What is her life like?
You know, I have to say she's a really amazing human being. You know, Pam and I have definitely become friends throughout this process. I've been talking to her on the phone for 12 years or so. She's exactly like what she was in the trial, honestly, which is angry. And that's part of the reason why she's in prison is because she was an angry woman. She's feisty. I think of her as someone who I would probably be friends with if she were not in prison. She's incredibly intelligent. She's got 3 degrees. She's got a law degree. She is a minister. She is the person responsible for training new people that come into the prison about prison life. She, you know, during like a big AIDS crisis in Bedford Hills, she was the one who was sitting at people's bedsides, like taking them into death. She's a good person. And
I guess
it's so hard to explain that to people because they have this idea of her.
Well, I guess my question for you is, do you think she told them to do?
No,
that? You don't.
So everybody always asks me this question. Is she guilty, Mel? And I say this. I think what happened was Pamela Smart was 21 years old when she had an affair with a 16-year-old who she was not a teacher. She was a media studies coordinator person, right? She didn't work in the high school necessarily. She worked in and out of the high school. She had an office there. She met this kid. Her husband of a year had just cheated on her, had a one-night stand. She was pissed off. She was embarrassed. She felt shitty about herself. This like 16-year-old kid. She came from privilege. She came from a lot of money. She was a white woman in New Hampshire. Which that's
she reminds me of Karen Reed in certain ways.
Oh, in a lot of ways, especially with the media and especially with the way she was portrayed in the media as being this cold-hearted bitch.
Well, also because she's just smart. Like the two, like I could see myself being portrayed that, like these very intelligent women knowing they're being fucked. How could you not be mad?
And that's the thing, you know, and I said this, I think yesterday or the day before in one of the live streams, if Pamela Smart if her lawyers had listened to her the way that Karen Reed's lawyers had listened to her, it would have been a very different outcome because Pam was doing the same thing that Karen was doing. She knew her own case inside and out, and she was telling them when it was wrong and when it was right and what was happening, and they weren't listening to her because she was a 22-year-old kid. I mean, at the end of the day, one of the other points of the habeas, and this really blows my mind, and it's a point that's always stuck out to me. In the closing arguments, her attorney, Paul Toomey, said to the jury, I mean, listen, we all know she's guilty of witness intimidation. So just don't even worry about that one.
In 1 second, you're enjoying your first day off in forever. Then mid-lunch, your phone buzzes. A window's been broken at home and you're miles away. In 1 second, everything can change. That's why ADT offers security systems with 24/7 monitoring with tech that helps first responders prioritize your emergency. And with the ADT Plus app, you can stay informed and in control of your home from virtually wherever you are. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com to learn more.
Oh my God.
It's a violation of, I think it's her Sixth Amendment. Right. Here's the fucking crazy thing, Maggie. Her attorney to me, 1 year after she was convicted, after he did that to the jury, he is representing this guy named Anaya in the state Supreme Court in New Hampshire and saying, hey, this guy's been convicted and it's not fair because his attorney told the jury he was guilty to get him out of the death penalty. He had just done the same thing to Pamela Smart a year prior, and now he's representing this guy in front of the state Supreme Court.
Wow.
And one of the other jurors does an interview with the Boston Globe after she's convicted and said, I mean, we didn't even bother thinking about the witness intimidation because her lawyer told us she was guilty. Why has no one in 35 years ever brought that up?
Wow. I guess that is a question. Like, why?
Bad, you know,
lawyering. I have over the years been asked to cover her case, and I think it was difficult for me to put it in the category of wrongful conviction. Like, yeah.
I didn't answer your question, actually. Oh. I know what you're saying. The answer to your question is she was 21 years old. She had an affair, a 2-week-long affair. They had sex like twice with a 16. I'm not saying that that he isn't a victim in this because he was 16 years old. In the state of New Hampshire, 16 is you're considered an adult to make those decisions, whatever. I think
we're
talking happened,
about a very different time period.
Like, absolutely.
Whether we want to feel a way about it or not, it was a very different time.
She was a privileged kid, and she was having an affair with a kid who was not privileged in any way, who already had, you know, a criminal record, a violent criminal record, and he became obsessed with her. And I think that what happened was she said, listen, Billy, the only way we're going to be able to be together is if Greg's not around. And he took that and he ran with it. And I think that's what happened. So is she guilty? She may be guilty. She says that that's what she said.
The thing is, I don't care if she said that. That's not guilty. I think I just never knew the case enough to put – I never obviously thought she did it, and I never thought she deserved the sentence that she has. No.
They've been out of prison for 10 years, the guys who did it. So
no, yeah. I don't think. But I think that's why I just never could fully be like she's innocent, because I never knew if she said to do it or not. But I always wanted to cover the case in the sense that I didn't care if she told them to do it or not. Her sentence. Right. And what happened to her is so wrong.
That is the angle that I come at, you know, because she was convicted of accomplice to first degree murder. And for the judge to say that he's mandated to give her that sentence was not true. And so the idea that none of her lawyers, none of her post-conviction attorneys have picked up on the fact that the judge was not mandated until this attorney, 35 years. Her father just died. They wouldn't even let her say goodbye to her father on the phone.
She really is one of the most hated women in America.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know the Darlie Rudier case, right?
Yeah, we talked about it. So I interviewed Darlie's sister. I was going to try to cover Darlie's case, but
because
she's on death row, like there's no way to talk to Darlie. And so I was in Texas when that happened with Darlie.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if I told you this, but so I had gotten pulled over. I had an expired inspection sticker in Dallas, and I was a kid. I think I was 20, 21 at the time. I didn't know anything about how to deal with tickets or do it. My parents didn't teach me any of that shit. So I had a warrant for a speeding ticket. I get pulled over. I got a rainbow sticker on the car. I got a shaved head. I got tattoos. I got piercings. It's 1996, 97. And immediately the cops are harassing me. They're telling me, you know, some people deserve to be hated. They're convinced I'm a drug addict. Like, they're frisking me. They call in backup. They're slamming my head into the pavement. They're slamming my head into the car. They handcuff me. They take me to jail. On the way to jail, they go, I'm like, what? I don't know how this works. And I'm like, how do I have to pay money? Do I have to go to court? What do I have to do? And I'm crying. I was on my way to pay my tuition in college.
Oh my God.
And the guy's like treating me like I'm like the lowest person on the planet. And he's like, you got to pay your bail. And if you can't pay your bail, I guess we'll just ship you off to be Darlie's new cellmate.
Wow.
Darlie had just happened. And I was terrified. I was like, I'm going to the women's prison to be Darlie Routier's cellmate. And I was convinced that she had slaughtered her children.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that's my connection to Darlie, and that's why I've always wanted to talk to her, because I had the same connection with Pam where I was convinced by my family that she was this like murderous slut who had killed her husband. And I believed it. And when I realized that I was wrong, I felt so much guilt. And I felt the same way about Darlie. So I really wanted to talk to Darlie, but obviously I can't. You're the one who was like, yeah, she can't talk to you.
I wrote letters with her a bunch. She's also wonderful. She talks a lot about her gardening and how much she loves that. And yeah, Darlie too. I've always believed in her innocence. It's really sad. Yeah.
The facts of that case, the evidence in that case blow my mind. And the last time I talked to her sister, she told me that they were testing DNA, but that's been like a year.
So that's why I was supposed to interview her. I was supposed to go there. And last minute, she said, no, sorry again. And I think I'm close with her attorney. And I think it's because they've just had some movement. That's what they keep saying. Yeah. They're like, it's not the right time. We're working on things. So I hope there's
the Innocence Project is involved in that one.
She has the New York Innocence Project, like the big dogs.
Oh, good for her. Yeah, good for her. I do hope, because DNA is, I think, the key to this case. You know, I think that it's ludicrous. I actually, the other key to this case is really dissecting what the judge allowed in and what the judge didn't allow in and what the jury saw and what they didn't see. And I think that if people outside of our actual justice system would take a look at what the jury saw and what they didn't see, they would realize that there's something very wrong in this case. And I'm mostly talking about, you know, this silly string video being used as an emotional ploy with the jury, and they didn't see what actually happened, what her injuries were. Because if you look at Darlie's injuries, you know she's innocent. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And saying that she did that to herself and she would know how to do that is just so bonkers. The fact that her husband, her ex-husband, whatever, has believed in her innocence, like, it's really awful. There was something I was going to say and now I forget.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's okay. Too much.
No, but I could show you guys my blind cat.
Yes, it's please do.
Sally.
Oh, Sally. Oh her my gosh, she's so cute.
If you know sci-fi, her name is Sally Shears. It's from Neuromancer. She's a badass cyborg. And she's got like cyborg eyes. So that's why I named Sally.
She's very sweet, Sally. Do you just have one cat?
Girl, I have so many cats. I have two others, but yeah, I've recently had two others and then they died. And I have two more. I always have three.
My longest relationship, I always say this, my longest relationship was with my cat Tallulah. She was the runt of the litter, this little teeny tiny black cat. And I saw a sign that said free kittens and I walked in and she was sitting on the bottom step and she was the smallest and she was being very still. And I picked her up and I took her from 20 to 38. That cat went everywhere. She was homeless with me. She went all over the country with me. And she sadly died when she was 18, almost 19 years old. But she was my best fucking friend.
Yeah, so that was my cat. I got her in college. She just died this past winter. She was 18 also.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She went everywhere. Yeah. She moved multiple states.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, girl, you've been everywhere.
Hey, it's 11:15 here in the morning. Do you want to break some news about your partner?
Oh, wait. Let me see if that.
Babe? Did you announce yet?
It's 11 your time. All right. Well, we teased it. So you guys pay attention. What's your partner's name, Maggie?
Greg Stoker.
So in about 45 minutes, go, you know, hit the Googs and look up Greg Stoker.
Greg Stoker.
What's happening.
In 45 minutes, Google him.
Congrats, Greg.
Mel says congrats. You hear her voice all the time on the podcast, Karen Reed Podcast.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm prepping for character assassinations, mudslinging.
Oh, yeah. Especially in Texas.
You know politics.
Mel said especially in Texas. Mel lived in Austin for a bit. And as a
I
young
in Dallas,
was,
but I went,
beat
I
the shit
in,
out of by the police.
Yeah.
Yeah, Texas strong.
Texas strong.
Texas strong, baby. So... Right. Maggie,
yes,
you're amazing and I love you. Is there anything else you want to tell the audience about what you're doing or what's happening or what you're working on or what they should do with their time?
Well, obviously follow, you know, I would love if everyone listened to Graves County. Quincy Cross's mm-hmm. case is moving through the courts right now. Feel really proud about that. He just had his evidentiary hearing, so we're waiting for a ruling. And I'm doing a season two, whether it's continuing Quincy's case or finding mm-hmm. another case in this county. This prosecutor has been in office since 1984, and I just found mm-hmm. 5 wrongful convictions from one murder. Yikes. So what the hell else has she been doing? So that's what I'll be doing. And then, you know, I'm really paying close attention to our streets and the militarization and the training grounds for a militarized United States. It's really scary.
Just for the record, you believe that Quincy is wrongfully convicted. Quincy Absolutely. Is the Bone Valley season 3 subject, Quincy Cross. Mm-hmm. And I had one other question. I just want to talk to you a few minutes about Bone Valley. The witness who testified against Quincy, who now lives out of state and is being like paid an allowance basically by a local cop. Is that right? Did I get that
allegedly,
right?
Allegedly been paid. She just testified to this actually, been paid by the KBI agents, Wyatt, and tell the same story.
That, the interrogation by the KBI agents was one of the most, terrifying things that I listened to in that podcast. Everybody go listen to Bone Valley season 3. Horrifying. It's amazing.
And I just got awful. To see those guys in court, the evidentiary hearing, and, Bob O'Neill was as disgusting, Lee Wise was as disgusting on the stand as he sounds in those tapes. He lost it at the female defense attorney 2 times. The judge had to put him in a timeout, and the attorney was able to say, "You're talking to me like this in a courtroom. How did you talk to those girls?"
Back then,
in closed doors in a hotel room, like. What did you
vulnerable women mm-hmm. I just wanted to say Ruth says Graves County is my favorite podcast of 2025. Maggie, your investigative and interview skills, the way you put this story together with vulnerability and touches of humor, it was powerful and authentic. I completely agree, Ruth. Maggie is a stellar human being, but she's also a stellar journalist and a storyteller. And
well, you know, it's hard, Mel. It's, you know, this one was really hard too because we had so many imperfect you know, like, and I love telling stories with those people because all of us are so flawed. I could tell you all of my flaws, you know? So I think that's why it was so nuanced, because these people were just so complicated themselves.
Absolutely. And
I loved diving into their world, really. I've become close with a lot of them.
Yeah, that's what happens. Like, because I believe all human beings are flawed. I also really appreciate human beings who are able to change and who are able to say I was wrong. And so when those things happen, I'm really drawn to people like that. And so I tend to be drawn to, I think that, you know, with everything we go through in our own lives, and I've been through a lot of stupid shit, I can see it in other people, you know, and when I see that that person is suffering, and sometimes I see a mirror, I see somebody who did the same thing that I may have done at some point in my life, and they're the ones who ended up in prison.
Yes.
Or they're the ones who ended unhoused or whatever it might be. It cuts me so deeply that I want to understand their story and how these two people, me and this person, went different ways.
Yes, absolutely.
And as far as the evidentiary hearing goes, I don't know how much you can talk about it, but why was the hearing granted? What is how strong is the evidence?
Yeah. So I don't want to spoil anything for people. So if you don't want to hear about evidentiary hearing, go away. So yes, he was granted the evidentiary hearing based on, they argued 13 points, and he was granted it on like 2 of them. Mm. A lot of the DNA evidence that was new that came back, excluding all of them, you know, they argued that it was there at the first trial. It just wasn't, you know, so everything was thrown out except for the witness recantations and a new witness who has now come forward. So the young women, they're all women now, but at the time they were girls. So if I say girls, I'm talking about them. So what's beautiful is that their lives were destroyed and torn apart by these awful, terrible men in power. And they all turned against each other. And now, you know, 26, 25 years later, I caught this beautiful moment of them in the courthouse. of them all hugging and making amends with each other now that they're telling the truth and coming together against these men who ruined their lives. It was so beautiful to see them hugging, and they were all crying and just like, we're here together now. And it was like, you know, it was just one of those moments. I have no words for it, but I was like, wow, this is what it's about. Like, yes, you are reclaiming your power. You are taking it back. These gross men are the ones now being questioned and grilled, and they'll be questioned and grilled even more when there's a civil trial. They're going to be deposed for God knows how many hours because these defense attorneys are gunning for them. They are gross, inappropriate, unprofessional, and they should be held accountable.
It's so reminiscent of, you know, Central Park Five and cases like that. I mean, how many times do we have to see young kids turning on each other because they're fucking terrified of cops?
Yes. And it's these, so you know, and this especially, you know, these were young teen girls, early 20s, had kids, you know, they're being threatened that their kids are going to be taken away. And, you know, that's, they didn't know any better. It's just so devastating what was said to them and how it really has ruined their lives. Like Venetia Stubblefield, I took her, my producer and I took her to sushi. You know, after all this was over, she's virtually homeless. So we were like, we'll take her out, you know, whatever you want, Venetia. Yeah. And just to see her smile and happy, and, you know, we gave her some Wi-Fi for her phone. It was just this moment of like, you're so fucked and you didn't have to be. No. You didn't have to be. And these men did this to you.
Yeah. And that is a woman who doesn't come from a place of means to begin with and has spent her entire life doing that. And then I look at the juxtaposition of Karen Reed, who is a woman of privilege and power. And she too has lost everything because of a corrupt system that tried to pin a crime on her because that was the easiest way out.
Yes.
And people can look at her and they can be like, oh, she gets her hair done and she wears these dresses and her closet looks like this. She did have a life. She worked for Fidelity. She was well off. She was a powerful single woman who was in charge of her own life, and she's pretty much lost everything. And the fact that these two women can exist in the same sphere and have gone through the same kind of things, but one of them may never be able to get back or get anything on track. And Karen will probably be okay.
Yep.
But they still lost so many years of their lives and everything they had.
It's awful.
And it's insane that it comes down to mostly powerful white men.
And you know, the interesting thing in Grace County is these detectives were black, and that's black. They were intentionally sent because, you know, it's just, it's all so twisted. But yes, so we are waiting. They had, the prosecution is submitting, no, the defense is submitting their brief. They had 30 to 40 days, and the prosecution has 60 days to respond. So we have 100 days for the judge to rule. And that was as of December, late December. So sometime in March, we're hoping.
Amazing.
To get,
amazing.
Yeah.
That's why I was really shocked when I heard February 27th for Pam's hearing, because New Hampshire is notoriously, they drag their feet. She'll put in a, you know, commutation petition or something like that, and it'll take them a year to even get back to her.
Is Sutherland still there?
Sutherland.
Okay. He was the, who I was dealing with the Mora stuff. He was around for a bit.
He might be. I haven't heard his name at all. When you said Sutherland, I was like, oh, I went to school with like 17 Sutherlands. So maybe one of them.
Probably.
Anyway, I don't want to take up any more of your time, Maggie. I know you have like a job and stuff. So, and
yeah, you know, just a little jobby.
Yeah. But I still appreciate you taking the time with me.
This is great. I mean, I'm listening anyway. So this cuts out my listening of you guys today.
You should listen to yourself. Sometimes it's fun.
I listen back and I'm like, I
edit everything and I'm like, I'm so sick of my fucking voice.
I know.
All right, well, I really appreciate you. I know the audience loves your work. Please, everybody, go check out Bone Valley season 3 with Maggie and pay attention to her cases, because the work she does is really important and amazing, and you are definitely a voice for a lot of people who are voiceless, and you're my idol and I love you. And thanks everybody.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I met you through Ellen. So I love all these connects. Yeah.
I know. Ellen's so funny. She was really funny yesterday. Thanks everybody for tipping. Thanks everybody for the memberships. And obviously if you are not a member, you will be able to see this in a little bit when it comes live on the channel. And Maggie, you're amazing. And I'm so happy for you and your partner. And I can't wait to hear more about what's going on.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
I'm going to hit the end stream. Our outro video is going to play. So I'm going to say bye to you right now.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.